Imagine coming home one day, just from work or whatever, to find out you don't actually own your own backyard.
Oh, that would be a nightmare.
Right, like you've mowed the lawn for years, you've built a patio, maybe even, set up a built-in barbecue back there.
Yeah, you just assume it's your dirt.
Exactly. And then, because of a slightly leaning brick wall between you and your neighbor, you suddenly discover that the land isn't yours at all.
It's a complete shock.
It is. And not only that, but this tiny misunderstanding about a boundary line suddenly renders your entire home uninsurable.
Which is catastrophic.
Totally. It triggers local government mandates, throws the entire neighborhood into this financial nightmare. So, welcome to this deep dive.
Glad to be here.
Today, we are taking you into the honestly incredibly high-stakes world of suburban property disputes. We're looking at a 2026 State Administrative Tribunal ruling from Western Australia.
Right, the case of Hadanot and Zar.
Yeah, Hadanot and Zar, 2026, Wasat, 25. And our mission for you today is to unpack the legal fictions that, well, so many of us live with every single day.
Because we all have them.
We do. And we want to show you how a seemingly invisible legal line can completely blow up a community.
It's a remarkable case. I mean, it perfectly illustrates the friction between how we feel about our homes and what the law actually says on paper.
The paperwork always wins, doesn't it?
It always does. And fittingly, the tribunal member presiding over this case, Mrs. R. Petrucci, she actually opens her legal decision by quoting Robert Frost.
Wait, really? The poet?
Yes. She quotes his famous 1914 poem, Mending Wall. You know the one, right? With the classic line, good fences make good neighbors.
Oh, wow. The imagery in that poem is so, like, collaborative. Two neighbors walking the property line together, picking up fallen stones.
Yeah, fixing the boundary.
Right, bonding over the shared maintenance of this physical line between them. But clearly, bringing up that poem in a legal ruling about property damage is laying out some heavy tragic irony right at the start.
Precisely, because she uses it to highlight how these two neighbors absolutely did not come together to mend their wall.
I'm guessing they went the other route.
They weaponized it. I mean, they dragged each other through local councils, tribunals, and even the Supreme Court.
Okay, so let's unpack this because I really want to know how a wobbly wall turns into a legal thriller. Set the scene for us. What kind of property are we actually talking about here?
Well, to understand the mechanics of this whole disaster, we have to start with the physical architecture. We are looking at what is called a four-lot, single-tier, quadruplex strata scheme in Como, Western Australia.
Let's translate that for anyone who isn't, deep into real estate law. A single-tier quadruplex just means four side-by-side townhouses, right?
Yeah, or units sitting on one single block of land. That's a perfect way to picture it.
Four individual units side by side, sharing one larger footprint of land.
Exactly. And our two main players live right next to each other. In lot three, we have an owner who has lived there for 35 years.
Oh, wow. So she's a veteran of the building.
Right. She is deeply invested in the property, both emotionally and financially. And next door, in lot four, we have a brand new owner who just purchased her unit in September 2023.
So you have that classic dynamic.
The old guard versus the new blood.
Yeah, the neighborhood veteran who knows how things have, quote unquote, always been done, and the newcomer who is just looking at the paperwork in front of her.
And the inciting incident that sparks the war between them is a brick wall that divides their backyards.
Which they call courtyards in the documents,
Right,
right?
courtyards. So the veteran owner in lot three claims that back in 2015, the previous owner of lot four, the guy who lived there before the newcomer bought it, he used a bobcat to excavate and level his backyard.
A bobcat, like the heavy machinery.
Yes, he wanted to build a patio and put down some AstroTurf.
And using heavy machinery a few inches from an old brick wall usually doesn't end well.
No, it did not. The owner of Lot 3 insists that this bobcat excavation fundamentally destabilized the foundation of their shared dividing wall.
So it was a slow burn.
Very slow. Over the years, the damage progressively worsened. The wall started leaning ominously.
Ominously leaning walls are never good.
No, and the structural shift was so severe that the veteran owner's built-in barbecue actually started pulling away from its gas line.
Oh, that's incredibly dangerous.
Her own patio started leaning too. It became a genuine physical hazard.
Which brings us to the massive legal twist in this story. The part that honestly completely upends what you think you know about home ownership.
It really does.
Because when I first looked at the facts of this case, I just assumed they were arguing over who pays for a fence on their property line. But neither of these women actually owns the brick wall.
No, they don't.
In fact, neither of them formally owns their own backyard.
Well, what's fascinating here is the massive disconnect between human behavior and legal blueprints.
How does that work?
According to the original strata plan, which was registered way back in December 1975, those courtyards and the brick wall dividing them are
Okay.
legally designated as common property.
I need you to break down how that is even possible. How can the fenced-in patch of grass directly behind someone's back door be common property?
It comes down to how strata laws operated in the 1970s. Often, when these plans were drawn up, the legal boundary of a lot was drawn strictly around the physical, internal brick-and-mortar structure of the building itself.
Just the interior wall.
Basically, yeah, everything outside those bricks, the driveways, the front lawns, and yes, the backyards, was tossed into a shared bucket called common property.
Legally belonging to everyone.
Exactly. It belongs to the entire strata company, meaning all four lot owners own it equally.
That is a terrifying concept if you really think about it. You're telling me that for 30 years, the owner of Lot 3 was landscaping, building patios, putting up a locked gate.
Treating it as her private sanctuary.
Right. But she was legally just occupying shared land. It's just
If
like, it's like claiming a seat at a crowded concert by just draping your jacket over it.
That's a great analogy.
It completely works, and everyone respects it right up until the exact moment someone actually checks your ticket and calls security. How does a whole building just hallucinate a legal reality for decades?
Well, people naturally crave defined private spaces. When there is a patch of grass behind your door, the psychological instinct is to fence it off and call it yours.
Yeah, of course.
And the other three owners implicitly agreed to this setup for decades by simply not challenging it. They respected the invisible boundaries.
But the law doesn't care about invisible boundaries.
No, it doesn't. And the tribunal makes a crucial ironclad point in this ruling. Informal use, no matter how long it goes on, does not legally alter a boundary line.
So a handshake agreement from 1996 means absolutely nothing to a new purchaser who walks in with the actual legal title in 2023.
Exactly. The new owner of Lot 4 looks at the registered strata plan, sees the words common property, and realizes she shouldn't have to foot the entire bill for a leaning, dangerous wall that she legally only owns a quarter of.
Because it's common property.
Right. The responsibility to fix it logically and legally falls to the strata company as a whole, all four owners.
I can see the train crash coming from a mile away. This leads directly to a strata council meeting in December 2024 that must have been unbelievably hostile.
The tension was palpable, yes. The new owner of Lot 4 is acting as the strata secretary. She puts forward a motion to raise a special levy, split equally among all four lot owners, to repair or replace the damaged wall.
Okay, standard procedure so far.
She even provides a quote from a local building service, and three of the four owners vote in favor of it.
Let me guess. The 35-year veteran owner of Lot 3 votes against it.
She is furious. She refuses to agree.
And as I read through the source material, I completely understood why she was furious. Because there was a hidden financial detail here.
Yes, a very important detail.
When the newcomer bought Lot 4 back in September 2023, she didn't just buy the house as is.
No, she did not. During the sale process, she and the previous owner, the one who supposedly caused the bobcat damage, signed a variation to their sales contract.
And what did that do?
The seller actually gave the new owner a $5,350 credit on the final sale price.
Wait, hold on. A credit specifically for what?
The credit was explicitly earmarked as compensation for the damaged dividing wall.
Are you kidding me?
I am not.
If she got a $5,000 discount on her house specifically to fix the wall, why is she legally allowed to turn around and make the other three owners, two of whom live on the other side of the property and don't even use that wall, pay for it?
Well, it is the central burning question of the dispute. And if we want to understand how the tribunal looked at this, we have to look impartially at the new owner's defense.
Okay, what's her side of the story?
She argues she was essentially sold a lemon regarding the true context of the wall. She claims she was told the damage was just standard deterioration due to age.
So, like, normal wear and tear.
Exactly. Maybe some rusted metal ties inside the brickwork or tree roots pushing up the foundation.
So she's claiming she had no idea she was stepping into a decade-long blood feud about a bobcat.
She maintains she was totally unaware of the history. Furthermore, she points out that she actually spent a significant chunk of that credit on administrative and investigative costs just trying to get the repair started.
Wait, how do you spend thousands on admin costs for a fence?
Because the veteran owner in Lot 3 was demanding strict assurances that fixing the wall wouldn't cause an avalanche of subsidence into her yard.
Ah, okay.
So the new owner had to spend over $800 on structural engineering reports. She also had to spend money on legal advice as the hostility escalated.
Okay, I can see how structural engineer fees eat into a discount pretty fast.
Yeah, by the time they actually get around to physically fixing the fence, she argues there is barely $2,000 left of that original credit.
That changes things a bit.
And legally speaking, her trump card is always the strata plan. Regardless of the credit, the land is designated as common property. Therefore, under the letter of the law, the strata is liable.
While they are locked in this financial standoff, the physical reality of the wall isn't waiting around for a legal verdict, right? It is actively crumbling.
Oh, it's getting much worse.
And it triggers the local government. The city of South Perth steps in and issues a formal building order in January 2025.
And this isn't a suggestion. It's a mandate.
Right. The city declares the wall and the veteran owner's leaning patio to be dangerous.
This is where the physical demolition finally begins. The wall is divided into two sections to manage the work. Part A, which is closest to the actual houses, is repaired.
Who pays for that?
The new owner of Lot 4 pays the $5,685 for that repair out of her own pocket.
But Part B, the back section of the wall, is beyond saving. The city orders it completely demolished.
And the strata decides to replace it with a gray color bond metal fence.
Right. For anyone unfamiliar, color bond is basically pre-painted corrugated steel. It's much cheaper than custom brickwork.
Much cheaper. The cost to put it up is $2,489.
So what does the new owner do?
She pays the invoice up front, but then turns around and collects $622 from Lot 1 and $622 from Lot 2 to cover their quarter shares based on that December meeting vote.
And the veteran owner in Lot 3 absolutely refuses to pay her share.
Oh, she hates the color bond metal. She argues the original wall was a structural aesthetic part of the building and demands a like-for-like, brick-for-brick replacement.
She gets so desperate to save the bricks that she actually goes to the Supreme Court of Western Australia.
It's wild.
She tries to file an emergency injunction to physically stop the builders from tearing down the bricks.
She does. And the Supreme Court denies the injunction. The dangerous brick wall comes down. The gray metal fence goes up. But the hostility between these two neighbors has now reached a fever pitch.
So here's where it gets really interesting. Because while these two are battling over brick versus metal, this highly localized dispute suddenly triggers a massive, invisible threat that endangers the entire complex.
The insurance.
Right. Because of the dangerous leaning wall and that leaning patio, the strata company's insurer looks at the property, assesses the risk, and flat out refuses to renew their building insurance policy in May 2024.
I want to emphasize how catastrophic this is. Risking a multi-unit property without building insurance is a colossal liability.
It's insane.
If there's a fire, if a severe storm takes off the roof, or if someone simply trips and gets seriously injured on the common property driveway, every single lot owner could be held personally, financially responsible. They could be ruined.
I want to pause here and talk directly to you, the listener. If you're listening to this and you live in a townhouse, a condo, or any property managed by a homeowners association, this is the part that should terrify you.
Absolutely.
A petty fight over a fence that you have zero involvement in can literally make your own home uninsurable and bankrupt your building.
And the veteran owner recognizes this existential threat immediately. She emails the other saying, "Risk massive subsidence without insurance is insane."
So what does she do?
Desperate to protect her 35-year investment, she goes out in August 2024 and manages to find an insurer, Suncorp, willing to cover the strata. The total premium is about $4,500.
Okay, so she solves the problem.
She pays her 25% share out of pocket, which is roughly $1,127, and she sends the bill for the remaining 75% to the other three owners.
And this is where the spite completely overrides logic. The new owner of Lot 4 and the owner of Lot 2 flat out refused to pay their share of the insurance premium.
They refused to pay.
I was reading this and screaming at the source material. Why would you refuse to pay for the one thing protecting your entire net worth?
Well, their justification is purely procedural, but heavily influenced by the animosity. They argue that the veteran owner didn't fully disclose the severity of the structural issues to Suncorp when she bought the policy.
What do you mean?
Specifically, they claim she hid the active city building order regarding the wall and patio. Their position is that if the insurer doesn't have the full transparent picture of the risks.
The policy is essentially void anyway.
Exactly. So why pay a premium for a useless piece of paper?
Okay, I have to push back on that logic. Isn't it a strict legal requirement for a strata company to have active insurance at all times?
It is.
You can't just boycott an insurance premium because you're mad at your neighbor or suspicious of her paperwork. If you think the policy she bought is bad, don't you have a legal obligation to go out and get a better one?
You've hit the nail on the head, and that is exactly the legal mechanism the tribunal focuses on. If we connect this to the bigger picture, Schedule 2A of the Strata Titles Act in Western Australia mandates that a single-tier strata scheme must insure its common property.
It's not a suggestion.
It is not optional. It is a strict statutory duty.
So the judge essentially looks at them and says, you can't just cross your arms, say no, and leave the building exposed.
The tribunal takes a very dim view of their actions. The judge states that taking the stance of refusing to pay the premium without actively seeking alternative insurance is completely unacceptable and a direct breach of the act.
What about their defense that the policy was void?
The defense that no insurer will cover us while the building order is in place doesn't hold up in court because they provided zero evidence that they even tried to find an insurer who would accept those terms. It illustrates how localized spite can completely blind people to their legal responsibilities.
Let's take stock of where we are. We have a completely uninsurable property. We have an active city building order threatening fines. We have a brand new color bond metal fence that one owner disguises.
A total mess.
Thousands of dollars changing hands improperly, and neighbors who probably can't even look at each other in the driveway. The system is completely deadlocked.
Yes, the mechanisms of the strata company have entirely broken down.
Which is why the legal system finally drops the hammer.
Enter Section 200 of the Strata Titles Act. This specific section of the law grants the state administrative tribunal what are known as statutory discretionary powers.
When I read what the judge did with these powers, my jaw actually dropped. She doesn't just look at this mess and issue a few fines. She doesn't just say, pay each other back and behave.
No, she goes much further.
The judge uses this power to fundamentally rewrite the legal reality of the building.
Well, when a strata is functionally deadlocked, when the owners literally cannot govern themselves, the law intends for there to be a powerful, practical means to break that deadlock.
It's like a software developer stepping in and performing a hard factory reset on a glitchy operating system.
Mm-hmm.
The judge wipes out 30 years of bugs and informal handshakes and forces a clean reinstall of the actual rules.
That's a good way to put it.
Walk us through exactly how she resolves this, because the mechanics of her ruling are masterful. Let's start with the root cause. The courtyards.
Okay, the tribunal retroactively forces the strata company to pass a resolution without dissent. This forced resolution legally grants formal exclusive use of the courtyards to lots 3 and 4.
Let's break down why that is such a massive legal flex by the judge. Usually, a resolution without dissent means every single owner has to agree 100%, right?
Yes.
Because you are literally taking shared land and giving it to one person. How can a judge just bypass the voting process and wave a wand to say, you all agree now?
This raises an important question about the limits and purpose of legal authority. The tribunal's goal here isn't just to punish bad behavior. Its mandate is to create future certainty and stop endless litigation.
Right.
By forcing this bylaw, the judge is legally formalizing the informal arrangement that everyone had already been living with for 30 years. But crucially, by making it a formal, legally binding exclusive use bylaw, the judge changes the burden of responsibility.
Ah, so who is responsible now?
From this day forward, the owners of lots 3 and 4 are legally forced to maintain their own backyards and any structures within them at their own individual cost. The strata company as a whole washes its hands of those courtyards forever.
Which is brilliant because it cuts off the root cause of the argument. Mm-hmm. If the wall falls down tomorrow, it's their problem, not the strata's.
Exactly.
So if the judge just handed them legal responsibility for those courtyards, what happens to that $2,400 bill for the metal fence they already built on what used to be common property?
The judge voids the December 2024 motion where they split the cost 4 ways. She officially rules that the motion is taken not to have passed.
So the whole vote is tossed out.
Yes. Because the courtyards are now officially for the exclusive use of lots 3 and 4, the cost of that shared dividing wall between them should logically fall solely to them.
Makes sense.
The judge orders that the cost of the color bond fence be split strictly 50-50 between the two neighbors. Furthermore, the new owner of Lot 4 is ordered to refund the $622 she collected from Lot 1 and the $622 from Lot 2.
The owners who don't use the wall get their money back.
Right.
But wait, what about that $5,350 credit the newcomer got when she bought the place? The veteran owner kept arguing she should pay for the whole fence because she got that discount. Did the judge factor that in?
The tribunal essentially ignores the credit in the final arithmetic for the metal fence. The judge looks at the broader equity of the situation. Well, remember, the new owner had already spent over $5,600 of her own money fixing part A of the wall to comply with the city's safety order. The tribunal finds it completely fair and equitable that the new dividing fence between their newly minted exclusive use areas is simply split down the middle.
That makes sense. It wipes the slate clean financially. But what about the massive invisible threat? How does the judge handle the insurance standoff?
The judge orders the strata company to immediately refund the veteran owner the $825 she had to cover for the other owners who boycotted the premium.
Okay, good.
And then the judge drops a strict, legally binding deadline. The strata company is mandated to obtain full compliant building insurance for the entire complex within 21 days of the order. No more excuses, no more boycotts.
Because the veteran owner's courtyard is now formally her exclusive problem, what happens to her leaning patio that the city declared dangerous?
The tribunal addresses that head on. The judge orders the veteran owner to either completely demolish the leaning patio and remove the debris, or get it fully certified as structurally sound by a professional engineer within 21 days.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, she has to comply with the City of South Perth's building order entirely on her own dime.
It is a sweeping surgical resolution. I mean, the judge tied up every single loose end by fundamentally altering the legal boundaries of their homes.
It forces them to be legally, financially responsible for the physical spaces they occupy. It aligns the legal paperwork with the physical reality.
So what does this all mean? We started this journey with a wobbly brick wall, a rumor about a bobcat, and a Robert Frost poem.
Quite the mix.
And we ended up with a Supreme Court injunction, a city building order, an uninsurable property, and a total court-ordered rewriting of a community's boundaries.
The ultimate takeaway is incredibly clear. The legal reality of property does not care about your assumptions, and it certainly does not care about how things have, quote-unquote, always been done.
Exactly. Hmm. If you are listening to this right now, and you live in a strata, a homeowners association, or any kind of shared property arrangement, do not rely on a handshake.
Never.
Go pull your actual registered property plans. Common property is a legal minefield. Mm. Just because you put a locked gate on a patch of grass or planted some lovely hydrangeas does not make that dirt yours when the bill comes due.
And I want to leave you with one final, slightly chilling detail.
Oh, I like chilling details.
Buried at the very end of this ruling, in paragraph 164, the tribunal member drops a very small, very pointed observation. She notes that while the court has just used its power to fix the legal boundaries for lots 3 and 4, the strata company may want to consider whether lots 1 and 2 should also formalize the exclusive use of their own backyards.
Oh, wow.
Think about the implications of that sentence. The owners of lots 1 and 2 just sat back and watched this absolute bloodbath unfold next door. They probably thought they were perfectly safe, just innocent bystanders.
Right.
But the judge is essentially winking at them from the bench, hinting, by the way, your backyards are legally vulnerable, too. You are living the exact same legal hallucination.
That is terrifying.
It really makes you wonder, as you listen to this, how many people right now are planting gardens, building patios, and hosting weekend barbecues on land they fundamentally misunderstand their legal right to? What invisible legal lines are you trusting in your own home?
Are your fences actually making you good neighbors, or are they just legal time bombs waiting to go off? Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Go check your property lines. We'll catch you next time.